You know all there is to know about Tony Gosling. He presents a terrific program every week for Bristol, for Bristol's BCFM, a terrific radio show on an excellent community radio station. I've listened to it. I've been invited on it before. It was an honour to be on it. Met Tony many years ago. He's worked for the BBC. He's as honest and as decent and as ethical a journalist as I've met in my time in this particular business. Now, spoke to you yesterday. I've been very sick for a bit and I missed it. That Ofcom has decided to investigate Tony's programme at the behest of the UKLFI, which is UK Lawyers for Israel, who've complained to Ofcom that Tony's programme was used for the propagation of conspiracy theories and extremist views. Delighted to welcome back to the programme our friend Tony Gosling. Tony, how are you?
Oh, fine. Thanks, Richie. I should be asking you that, really. You've obviously had a bit of a difficult time of it. How's things with you?
Things are good, mate. You had a proper dose, not man flu. I had pneumonia. It was rotten, but I'm back on my feet. I missed all of this.
You're back up from the depths of the ocean.
I am indeed.
Smashed your way back up through the ice, and you're with us again.
And I'm here again. Now, this is serious stuff. I wasn't being sycophantic last night when I talked about this on the programme. You're an excellent journalist. I've never known you to make a claim about something unless you had proof that you could prove what it was you were saying. I've often heard you say, it's my belief that, or I have a suspicion that, but I can't prove it yet. It's always been excellent. This is a nonsense, this. Where's this coming from, this UK Lawyers for Israel? Who are these people?
There's a couple of things which, if we just take a step back for a second, are just basic principles of journalism, which we can see that the London media are falling down all the time on these things. One is the separation of fact and speculation. I mean, we've heard, for example, just an example, the enormous so-called fact of the go-ahead of things like HS2, Hinkley C, these massive projects where billions of pounds of public money are being spent. Then we find actually, well, there isn't actually the money for them. So what you've got there is the mainstream press spinning something as a fact that this is happening, this is about to happen. And we find out later, well, actually what they were doing was they were just repeating something that had been sent to them on a press release by people who had a vested interest in those stories. So fact and speculation should never, ever be mixed up. And that is exactly what happens when it comes to conspiracy theories. So this is what you all get on many of the mainstream press. I did an interview on Andrew Neil's program, The Daily Politics Show, a few years ago, where he put together a mixture of all sorts of real conspiracies, things like the JFK assassination by the CIA, the death of Princess Diana, what I believe is the murder of Princess Diana, assassination effectively is a political murder, and things like the moon landings. You know, so what they were doing was deliberately mixing up fact and speculation and then saying, oh, well, here's someone else that does that, Tony Gosling. And my first point to them was, well, you've just done what journalists are supposed not to do, the opposite of journalism, and you've been mixing up these things. So you should never do that. And I do everything I can to not be afraid to speculate, but to make sure it's couched in that those terms of speculation. And when we know something as an absolute fact, then we can present it as an absolute fact. And that is an easy thing to do if you're just simply churning out the government rhetoric, because you'll keep your job. But what you're doing is you're betraying your listeners and your viewers and your readers. So it depends where your loyalties lie. Mine, I think, I hope anyway, are always to the listeners, the readers, whatever, you know, in situations like that. The other thing I'd say, Richie, about journalism is that you should be very careful about if you're investigating and criticizing, that you should be careful about the sort of spectrum between people who are poor and defenseless and people who are rich and powerful. So you should never be doing what for example, the Daily Mail and the Daily Express do quite a lot, is, you know, having a go at people who are basically trying desperately to survive on a council estate or on a traveller site somewhere. And you should be focusing your investigative efforts on the rich and powerful. Those are the people that we should be keeping an eye on. And so that's basically my, in a nutshell, my philosophy of what I thought I was doing when I joined the BBC back in 1989, and by 93 I'd found out actually that was almost an impossible thing to do at the BBC.
I've been that soldier. There is a little bit of echo. It's gone now, thankfully. I've been that soldier, not at the BBC, not for as long as you were there, Tony. I did bits and pieces for the BBC in the late 90s, early noughties, but it was just guest stuff, regional reporting in Ireland, very, very briefly. But look, I've been that soldier. They've taken exception, these UK lawyers for Israel, to interviews you've done with people I have a lot of time for, even though one of them won't speak to me. It's Tony Greenstein, isn't it? And Mikko Paled. And they've alleged that those interviews, were basically anti-Semitic. They also took offension to the mention of the Rothschild banking dynasty on the programme, and very, 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 very salient and very fair questions about what happened in Manchester on the 22nd of May. And that's what they've taken exception to.
In a nutshell, the complaint was, yes, conspiracy theories. Now, I pointed out to Ofcom, which they may not have known, that the term conspiracy theory was invented in 1967. We know exactly when it was invented, because it was designed to try to stop particularly a lawyer called Mark Lane, who was a very close friend of John F. Kennedy's. And the idea was to come up with a term that could be repeated again and again across the US mass media, which would demonize investigative journalists who were starting to get to the truth about the assassination of John F. Kennedy being from within the state. You know, in other words, say we had Lyndon Johnson involved, we had the boss of the FBI, the boss of the CIA. All these people were involved in the assassination because they had to be, because they would have to be involved in the cover-up. And that term, conspiracy theory, was put out at that time. We've got the documents. They've been released under Freedom of Information and are actually declassified documents that show you that's exactly what the Central Intelligence Agency was thinking about doing. And I was amazed today. I mean, things come full circle, don't they? Just listening to the World Service today, casually, and I hear in the background, and now we're going to speak to the former CIA expert, who is now working at Chatham House. And they don't often tell you what Chatham House is all about. Now, this is the Royal Institute for International Affairs, which the BBC used religiously. They did when I was there. And what you're getting basically is you're getting the intelligence service line from places like Chatham House in London, and you're getting the same sort of thing from the Council on Foreign Relations in the United States, the Institutes for International Affairs. They're right across Europe. There's a big one in Austria. Most of the countries of Europe have got an Institute for International Affairs. But I thought it might be worth just saying briefly what was behind that, because this was a Cecil Rhodes project. He wanted to set up the Royal Institute for International Affairs in London, and the Council on Foreign Relations in the States, the other institutes for international affairs, came from that. And this was Cecil Rhodes' will. He wanted, because he was the guy that basically exploited most of South and East Africa. And he could see the British Empire spreading at an incredible rate. And he and some of his friends believed that if the British Empire was to carry on as it was, that they could take over the world. So in his will, he said that they should set up a secret society to fund think tanks and to fund a privately run foreign policy in order to push for this empire to extend, to take over the world. Well, obviously that is not going to happen anymore, but the institutions that he funded still exist, and that's what we're hearing most of the time as the so-called experts in the BBC, is the legacy of Cecil Rhodes and effectively what is the voice of the British and the American and other NATO intelligence services.
I want to stay with this for a minute, this Ofcom complaint. The decision is going to be made and announced on Thursday, I think you told me.
We're not sure. We're expecting possibly Thursday, possibly tomorrow, yeah. I mean, it may be that it's an awkward one for them, so they have to delay it a bit. But we'll see. We're expecting tomorrow.
This particular complaint against you comes at a time when claims against people of anti-Semitism are, well, it's like a dozen or two dozen a day against various people, broadcasters.
Yeah, we've just had today this statement from Chris Williamson saying that he believes that there's been more made of anti-Semitism in the Labour Party than really exists.
But then he backed down from it. He's got a yellow streak a mile wide across his back. He then apologised and said he was wrong.
Didn't he?
Well, you see, I wouldn't have done. I'd rather do a job for I'd rather do a job, Tony, for a living that I really despise, something I really didn't want to do, rather than betray my principles.
Ken Livingston. He's likely to end up like Ken Livingston, expelled from the party. He's obviously decided he's got a much wider job to do for his constituents, and he's going to just doff his cap and say sorry, even though he doesn't necessarily mean it. A bit like Jeremy Corbyn has said he's backing a people's vote, even though I don't think really mean it. So there's lots and lots of pressure being put.
Gosling. Don't start with that nonsense now. Much as I love you, I think you're amazing. Don't start with that defending Corbyn nonsense. We'll come to that in a minute. But before we get to that, before we have a big argument, if I was your station manager, I would go to bat for you every day of the week and twice on Sunday. Nobody would tell me that I had to take you off the air or to temper the editorial of your programme or to moderate it. I would say, to hell with that. Does your station manager support you?
He's been supporting me, which is great, actually. Pat Hart, he does something called the One Love Breakfast every morning. Literally, he's 3 hours on the radio. It's Monday to Thursday every week, doing a sort of part political, bit of a jokey kind of show. But it's every morning on the radio here in Bristol. A lot of people listen to it. For a long time, it was shared on all the community channels in the city. That isn't happening right now. The reason he said he's backing me is because he believes that what we're doing is important anti-racist work. And the reason I say that is because this specific program that Ofcom have filed this complaint and investigation about at the behest of UK Lawyers for Israel is 23rd of November, right at the end of November last year. And what we were doing was something which is really important. The previous 2 months or so, we'd been using clips from almost all the Israeli cabinet. Now, this is something I haven't heard any of the national press doing. We want to know, who is the Israeli cabinet? What do they think? So I've been airing lots of clips from some of the extreme elements within that cabinet who have been supporting the nation state bill, which is this apartheid bill that's passed through the Israeli Knesset last year. And so we had been airing those for many weeks. And then I thought, look, what we need to do is we need to really drill into the philosophy of Zionism, and particularly the Likud party and the racist brand of Zionism, which is coming to the fore. And we've seen just literally this week, it looks now as if the Kahnists in Israel are going to be coming into the Knesset, because Netanyahu wants them to, in order to prop up his coalition collapse, basically. And these are Jewish extremists. They are into Jewish supremacy, this kind of thing, and so that's why I wanted to look deeply into the whole Zionist philosophy. And because we've had all this stuff with ISIS, haven't we? The most powerful tool of ISIS has been their ability to recruit people based on an interpretation of the Quran, this whole idea of creating a caliphate. So what they're doing is they're pulling at the heartstrings of people, saying, well, it says in the Quran here that we need to, sacrifice ourselves to bring about a caliphate in the Middle East. Or I don't actually think it says that, but it talks about a caliphate in the Middle East. So this has been used to recruit people into ISIS, and it's been very successful. We've had this case recently of the ISIS bride, Shamima Begum, and I did an article about that whole case in 2016 in November, which showed that the Turkish police had actually arrested the guy who recruited Shamima Begum and her friends. Amira Abbasi, and the more famous was Khadija Sultana. These are three kids from Bethnal Green in London who were recruited and brought to Turkey, to Istanbul, and then down to Gaziantep in southern Turkey, and then transferred to another handler to take them down to ISIS. Now, the crucial thing was the Turkish police had the laptop of her handler, the guy that recruited her online, that lured her over to Istanbul, and then met her at the bus station at the airport and went down to the south of Turkey with her. This is all online. It's internet if you want to have a look. And so you can see the Western intelligence services, because it was a Canadian guy that had been recruiting this bloke, and it showed on his laptop he'd been talking to this Canadian intelligence guy, and he'd been promised, the bloke that was doing the recruiting for ISIS had been promised, well, if you do this for a while for us, then we'll give you a Canadian passport, you can come and live in Canada and get Canadian citizenship. He'd recruited something like 160 people for ISIS. So this is their lifeblood. So this is why I say that this hasn't been, that was been looked into, but not, it hadn't been any publicity here in the UK at all, really, considering the importance of the Shamima Begum case. I'm amazed that that hadn't really got out there. So if you want to find that, it's on Redress Online. It's called, Did Canadian Taxpayers Foot Islamic State's Recruitment Bill?
Brilliant.
So that's
brilliant.
The article. But anyway, so that show we did on the 25th of November was looking at the Zionist philosophies. And I found there was a couple of people who'd written a book. One of the most fascinating, I thought, and articulate was this guy called David Livingston, who lives over in Canada. And he's just got a book coming out on this very subject. And I thought, well, what is it that's driving the Zionist philosophy that gets loads of people into these far-right Zionist parties, because they have religious beliefs of all sorts. You know, they say God gave us this land. We need to look at what exactly is it in the Bible that they're looking at. So anyway, that's what that show was about, and I can tell you the Israel lobby really didn't like it.
No, well, obviously not. That, on that, on this subject, there's so much to talk about between now and six, the top of the hour. Labour have just suspended Chris Williamson.
No.
So he has been suspended.
No, so, unbelievable.
So we live in a tyranny. A man speaks to a meeting. Let me just finish this point, though. I want to make this point. A man speaks to a meeting, and he tells those at a meeting that while anti-Semitism is wrong and it's bad and it's not good and all of that, that in his heart of hearts, he doesn't believe it's as bad as it has been claimed, and that traditionally this party is a party that rejects all of that sort of stuff. And for expressing that opinion, he's now effectively being kicked out of the party. See, this is a tyranny we live in.
Yeah. He's the guy who's been, first of all, he's been one of the main men on Venezuela. So he's been pointing out the BBC's absolutely ridiculous bias on their news bulletins about what's happening in Venezuela. The fact that it hasn't been reported that there are US sanctions on the country, which is one of the reasons why people are so hungry. Another reason is that the British have seized a load of Venezuelan assets and they're refusing to hand them over. Another reason why the country is hungry. So they're, and whilst, you know, Maduro can be blamed to a certain extent, obviously, for the economic situation, we've got the international financial system, which has been attacking, using economic warfare, Venezuela for many years, ever since the Chavez era. But more importantly, I suppose, Chris Williamson has been looking at digging into the Integrity Initiative and looking at the government funding for anti-Corbyn trolls and MI6 trying to undermine Corbyn. Now, this has enormous echoes with the attacks on Harold Wilson in the 1970s, where the security services were actively trying to, actually at that time it was a prime minister, but now they are so brazen that they're even prepared to go for an attempt to oust a leader of the opposition. And Chris Williamson was the main person in the Labour Party who'd been exposing that and it really protecting our democracy. And I think that this is the influence of the security services on Tom Watson. Let's not forget the person who sponsored Tom Watson, who'd been critical of Chris Williamson, to become deputy Labour leader, in other words, because he had a big campaign which cost a lot of money, was Max Mosley, who was the son of Oswald Mosley, the fascist leader in the Second World War. And so Max, I'm afraid, is probably behind this, you know, is one of those people who's been pulling Tom Watson's strings and trying to make sure that anybody that supports Corbyn, particularly intelligent and vociferous people like Chris Williamson, are booted out. So this is, I mean, it's extremely, I agree.
Speculation. I mean, I don't like Mosley. None of us like Max Mosley, but we don't know this for a fact. It's just speculation.
That's right. I did say speculation.
Oh, no, you did. No, listen, you did. You made it loud and clear. I'm just making the point.
He's been bankrolling Tom Watson, so, you know, then you draw your own conclusions to that.
Corbyn, then, and Brexit. Listen, before we talk about Brexit, the Russian military chiefs believe that the United States is mobilizing troops and is getting battle ready for an assault on Venezuela. What do you think?
Well, it's quite feasible, isn't it, because of all the oil. I mean, what we've seen there, of course, as well, is and I think this is another indication, Richie, of the big changes that we're seeing, is when you see an extreme propaganda campaign on the London media, and this business of what's happening in Venezuela on both the ITV Nightly News and the BBC National News at the weekend was extreme, extraordinary propaganda showing just entirely one side. And, you know, the various things I mentioned earlier, not reported at all. So it's as if it's a one-sided, you know, this guy's just got to go. Well, he's surrounded in Brazil and Colombia by far right regimes. The Brazilian one really is not, I mean, you could call him a Nazi, not even just a neo-Nazi. The new leader in Brazil, he's somebody who was agreeing with the death squads, for example, in the previous era, where Dilma Rousseff, who was president, she was subjected to and had for her friends killed by the death squads. And he's saying that he supports them. So we've got far right lunatics in Colombia and in Brazil, either side of Venezuela. I think the Americans do believe now they've got the country surrounded. And it could be they're trying to create a bloody civil war. I don't know if you saw the video I saw at the weekend, which was of the anti-Maduro supporters actually setting fire to these so-called aid trucks. It looked to me as if that's exactly what they were doing. So you've got agent provocateurs in there. That's what it seems to me, trying to create this crisis. Luckily, of course, Maduro's got a bit of support from outside, from the Russians, etc. But, you know, this could be a horrendous conflict. And, of course, if the US troops go in there saying that they're creating order, well, we know all they really want is the oil.
You know, I can't argue, I can't make a cogent argument against that for the sake of balance. I can't do it. Abby Martin did a brilliant interview with a guy called Alfred DeZayas. I took some of the audio and used it on Monday. He's the first guy to go into Venezuela in 20 years. And he went in on behalf of the United Nations. And he came out and his report basically contradicted everything that Western media had been saying about Venezuela in terms of the conditions that people are living on there. His report also contained his take on what's happened to the country, how the sanctions and everything else have reduced the country to the situation that it's in now. And in an excellent piece he did with Abby Martin, as I said, he said, you know, that he's not been able to get any take-up on his report from either the BBC or, you know, any other UK or US news media organisation. Again, tyranny. These are tyrannical times.
It's, you know what, it's like the eye of Sauron, isn't it? You know, the idea that, well, Syria, is now, ISIS has been destroyed. This creature of the NATO countries, this attempt at regime change in Syria, they thought they were being so smart moving all these jihadi nutters from Libya over to Syria. And of course, Al Jafri, the UN ambassador from Syria, pointed out, he said, most of the people fighting, you call it a civil war, a vast majority of the people fighting in our country aren't Syrians. And so, hang on, it's not a civil war. You know, it's those basic stuff like that we're not hearing. But the attitude seems to me to be that the Pentagon-led, NATO-led, and one at a time they're trying to pick various independent countries off. That seems to be what's going on. And, of course, this means there's potentially, anyway, in the future, an enormous conflict coming, because obviously there are other countries are aligning themselves with the Russians, the Chinese, other superpowers. And it seems as unless they do that, the US is and NATO is coming into they get a choice. It's a bit like the jackals coming in if your country doesn't do what it's told by the IMF. You know, basically people start dying, so you better do as what you're told by the IMF. And unless you do these, unless you behave yourself, you're going to get disruption in your country, because that's effectively what they've been doing with Libya. Is they've said, well, if Libya won't play ball, well, they can just have chaos. It's a terrific book by Dan Glazebrook, which is just really a collection of his articles, which is, I think, is the almost like the meme for the modern world, which is divide and ruin is the title of his book. And that's exactly what they're doing, is that they're creating chaos in these countries. And if they can't have control of them themselves, NATO, the Pentagon, AFRICOM, you know, this massive US Central Command structure, which supposedly covers the entire planet, entire Africa is organized by AFRICOM, which is based in Stuttgart, in Germany. You know, it's this massive office of the Pentagon, which controls Africa or attempts to control Africa. And if you can't, if you don't just do as we say, all you're going to get in your country is total gangsterism, and which is exactly what we've seen happen to Libya, which led to the enormous influx of migrants across the Mediterranean and the migrant crisis, which has now brought us to the stage where certainly the Greeks and the Italians were desperate for a referendum like we had to get out of the EU, because Brussels has done absolutely nothing to stop this flow of migrants across the Mediterranean.
Brilliant stuff, Tony. And each time they do it, each decade they do it, each year they do it to another country, the blueprint is the same, and it's instantly recognisable, and it's happening, it has happened and is happening in Venezuela. Right, let's move on. And before we talk about Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party's approach to leaving the European Union, I found it fascinating this morning to hear BBC Radio 5 presenter, not one of the anchors, but one of their, I think the Wake Up to Money guy, was speaking to a journalist in Germany, an English journalist in Germany, who was pointing out, even though he was very much pro-European Union, he was pointing out that the Germans, the German government, are particularly terrified of the UK leaving the European Union with no deal, because the German economy is in decline, of course, that's a fact. And things are not great there, and there's a huge worry about the impact that it would have on goods being sent to the UK from Germany. Now, that was an amazing thing, and it was shot down very quickly by the on-air BBC team. They very quickly moved on to something else. What's the Labour Party, what's Jeremy Corbyn playing at, having promised in the election manifesto a year and a half ago, or whatever it was, to honour the result of the referendum, to now be pledging to provide a people's vote on either May's deal or staying in the European Union? Tyranny, Tony.
Well, the reports yesterday, yesterday was a big day, wasn't it, for Brexit? We're basically hearing from the Labour Party that they're collapsing on their election commitment to see Brexit through, to honour the decision made by the people in June 2016, and the same from Theresa May. You know, we're going to be kicking the can down the road, it looks like now. It was almost inevitable that we see these sorts of betrayals of the voters. And, you know, this has been, I think it's been fascinating. It's an educational process for the voters. And I think certainly my experience is quite a lot of people who voted Remain originally. I mean, we're given this line that, there's loads of people out there that voted Brexit, but they've now changed their mind, blah, blah, blah. Well, I don't believe that. I mean, what I think has really happened is that quite a lot of people that voted Remain in the first place have just decided they want to go stick with the result of the referendum, because that's what people decided, and just get it over with and get it done. Certainly that's the main message which has been coming from business, is let's just get this sorted out, get it done, get rid of the uncertainty, because the uncertainty is making business making it very difficult for business. But no, it looks like now, we want to have another referendum. Now, what's not, this is from Corbyn anyway. Now, hang on a minute, because what happens if that is all equally a knife-edge referendum? Are we going to have to sit through another 2 years of turmoil, of decision-making about Brexit? So you're basically just extending this horrendous 2 years of agony and domination of the airwaves by this particular topic? Why can't we just get it sorted? We've also got in the cabinet, we've got these various threats from cabinet ministers against Theresa May, saying, look, unless you rule out a no deal, we're going to resign. Well, actually, what should happen if they're saying that publicly? Theresa May should sack them. And there's plenty of ERG and Brexit MPs who would be more than happy to step into the cabinet and do those jobs instead, but she hasn't done that. And that's really, I suppose, says more than anything else that Theresa May doesn't have the courage of her convictions, so she will not be seeing.
She's a Remainer.
We are going to have some delay, and of course that delay could be rather a long time. It doesn't, I mean, I'm amazed that they haven't managed to just say, right, well, we're going to have the backstop will last for example, if the backstop kicks in, it will last 6 months and then it will be over. I mean, it just seems to me to be a basic thing that you have to say. You cannot allow us to be staying in the EU indefinitely. And this is also a big sellout of the unionists in Northern Ireland, which they should not be doing, you know, whether you agree or not. You know, these political deals should be being stuck to, not betrayed at the last minute. So, I just think we're seeing our politicians in their true light, and it's an education for the British public. If they ever thought that politicians were going to be honourable, do what they said they were supposed to do, well, we're now finding out that it's unravelling. But there is another side to all this, Richie, and that might just simply be that Theresa May is getting from her civil servants, look, we simply cannot do a no deal. We're not prepared for it. And that, of course, is her fault, nobody else's fault, that the resources have not been put into preparing for a no deal.
Well, that wouldn't be by accident. That wouldn't be accidental. That wouldn't just be mismanagement. That would be deliberate. Of course, the European Union were never going to agree to a temporary backstop arrangement in Northern Ireland because the European Union doesn't want the UK to leave. This has been a stitch-up from day one, in my opinion. And as for how people see politicians, I came to the conclusion many years ago that the entire system has to be dismantled. We can never change our reality through the ballot box. Bernie Sanders is the proof of that. Jeremy Corbyn is the proof of it. Barack Obama is the proof of it. It doesn't matter who's in there. It never changes. If Jeremy Corbyn became Prime Minister sometime next year or even later this year, I guarantee you within a year and a half, the UK would be invading somewhere. I guarantee you that they would, and Corbyn would be endorsing it. That's the reality we live in.
I totally disagree with you.
I'm telling you, you and I will, much as I love you, we will agree to disagree on that forevermore.
Maybe dead. You know, for whatever reason, he may have a heart attack, you know, like John Smith had, something like that.
He's not a good man, Tony. This is not a decent man. Well, this is a horrible man, a fraud and a fake, who swore from the back benches for years that the European Union was a fascist dictatorship, that it destroyed industry, that it destroyed competition, that it drove down wages. This fucking bastard, I'm sorry for swearing, Tony, this is what he believes. He believes this, so he should be telling people this.
Well, he can't always, and no politician can always say exactly what they really believe.
Touché.
Because he's being boxed in by his Blairite MPs. We've now got this other party.
But he has the support of the country,
which, by the way, is being secretly funded for the next 6 months. We won't know where their money's come from because they've set up a private company to fund them rather than set up as a political party. So that's a complete con. So what's happening now is he's got loads of his Blairite MPs who are constantly threatening to him, saying, well, we're going to leave the party, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And of course, these MPs have got a lot of sway.
Yeah, but hang on, Tony. The membership of the party overwhelmingly support Corbyn. So the MPs don't actually matter. What's to stop Corbyn for... Well, hang on a second. Let me just finish this point and I'll get out of your way. What's to stop Jeremy Corbyn going on television? I always say this about these frauds like Corbyn. They'll never have the opportunity again because it is fleeting and he will be gone. What's to stop him going on national television and saying to the membership, listen, this is what's really going on. You put me in charge here to do this, to do that, to do this. I can't do it because you have a bunch of tyrants, Iraq war hangovers that are preventing me doing this and doing that. That's what he should do. Go down in a blaze of glory. But he's a fraud to you. Over to you.
Princess Diana tried that, didn't she, on Panorama?
Tony.
All I'm saying is that there is an immense amount of power within the parliamentary Labour Party as to what is the legislative programme going to be. That's the problem. And there are all sorts of people who are threatening. What they do is they basically threaten Corbyn. As we've seen today, the things like his allies, Chris Williamson, will be peeled away from him, will disappear because Corbyn hasn't towed the line. But to a certain extent, agree with you in that, he should be standing up to them because they have the attitude of give them an inch, they'll take a yard. As soon as you cave into them at all, then they're gone. But I mean, he's also in a horrendous position now electorally. You know, he's fallen a lot in the polls over the last year, even since the last general election. And so it's by no means guaranteed that he would do very well in a general election until Brexit is out of the way, until the European question is out of the way. And then if Corbyn and his allies focus on the benefit issues, things like that actually the Blairites don't support. This is the problem, is you've got a civil war going on in the same party, and things like getting out of NATO, which they don't support, Venezuela and Maduro, which the Blairites don't support. They're with the Americans. And if there was to be any kind of attempt at a war, the Blairites would vote for war. That's the sort of situation we're in. And Corbyn is up against this really strong phalanx within the party that are still just... I mean, it's not difficult to work out that they're loyal to Blair still, because they say all the same things that Tony Blair says.
All the same all things. It's the same old... It's the same old Blairites, as you said. It's the same old people. And
Unites are in a majority in the party as a whole.
So deselect them, then.
They're in a minority in the Parliamentary Labour Party. The same situation, I guess, is probably true to say within the Tory party, certainly in the cabinet, is that the Brexiteers and the no deal leavers are the majority in the Conservative Party as a whole, but they're not. That is not reflected in Parliament. So it just shows really that we've got a bit of a broken political system. And, you know, even if somebody like Corbyn gets elected, who is generally to the left, wants to do nationalisation of things like the railways, water, electricity, gas, this sort of thing.
Which he can't do inside the European Union, by the way.
It's impossible to get those things through.
Can I make that point, Tony? With the UK inside the European Union, Corbyn can't do any of that.
Another thing I'd like to bring up, if it's all right, is this business with the Chagos Islands, because I think that's really, really important. It's just the other day the European Court ruled, and of course this is another way of having a go at the Brits for Brexit, that the British took the Chagos Islanders off illegally. And of course the Chagos Islands are immensely important strategically in the Pacific for the US projection of power against China. And this is why this is also important. Anyone that's seen John Pilger's film The Coming War on China will know that the Americans have been making preparations for decades. I mean, we're talking about probably 50-60 years for a war with China, and which is why Diego Garcia, which is this massive US air base which has now completely taken over these islands in the Pacific, is so important. And that base, I would suggest, I mean, if we can go back to the story from a few years ago, is where the Malaysian airliner disappeared to. Now, it was heading to China with a whole bunch of people on board who had some very high-tech US technology, which they had been selling, attempting to sell to the Pentagon. And they were heading off to Beijing from Kuala Lumpur on that flight from Singapore area. And they were heading over, headed off east over the, off the peninsula, the Singapore and Malaysian peninsula. And then they doubled back on themselves. We saw later radar traces, which were released a few days afterwards, that showed that they actually doubled back on themselves. This plane had not disappeared at all into some Bermuda Triangle. And then it did a zigzag pattern, which is the same pattern as the planes performed on 9/11. It was south of the coast of India, and then it went down the coast of India and headed off down past to, and it was sighted off the coast of Mauritius that morning. And the only place it can really have been heading, Richie, with the fuel that it had on board, was Diego Garcia, almost certainly. It may have been being hacked and being flown remotely, or it might simply have been that the military had just radioed into the pilot and said, right, you need to just fly this way, because the military can do that, override what the civilian pilots do. So this place is very, very, I think, strategically important, and a great decision by the Europeans, by the European Court, even though, you know, I'm basically a Brexiteer and don't agree with the European Court. They've come up with the right thing this time.
Tony, but we're going to leave it there. Brilliant on that. I've not been following that story, so thanks for getting into that. I appreciate that. Let us know as soon as you know about this Ofcom decision. Yeah. I'm glad your station manager is supporting you, as well he should do. You're a rare breed. And I know how popular that programme is in Bristol, with FM listeners all across Bristol listening to it, and people listening to it around the country and indeed around the world on the internet. It's a terrific programme.
Have we got a minute to talk about Shamima Begum again?
I'm in it, but I'm going to stop you at 60 seconds. Okay. So off you go.
Right. And there was an amazing story about MI5 being worried about Daesh cells in every major British city. Now, this is I picked this one up a couple of days ago on RT. This is what we've been warning of on the radio for months, and well, actually over a year now, is we've got a lot of people returning to this country that aren't even being interviewed by the police or MI5. These are fighters, and yet now they've picked on this poor girl, Shamima Begum, who wasn't a fighter at all, and saying, oh, she's going to have to be arrested. Well, of course, the reason I think that they want to arrest Shamima Begum and put her on trial is because she knows too much. She can start blabbing about the NATO intelligence people who were involved in recruiting her, a 15-year-old girl from a school in East London, and getting her over to get married at 15 years of age. Finally, the other thing, which is this week, which is related to all this Middle East stuff, is the banning of Hezbollah. Insane action by the Home Secretary, Sahid Javid, who's a Bristol boy. Shame on him, because this is the government of Lebanon. And again, this is just kowtowing to the Israel lobby. We had Hezbollah editor of the Hezbollah newspaper come to speak in Bristol a few years ago. Richie, amazing guy, fascinating insight into the whole of Middle East history. The first library in the world was in Lebanon, and he, you know, we know it. And that's really, I think, I'd like to finish, is that many of these people, the Lebanese, Hezbollah, etc., have got a real sense of history. The BBC and the Israel lobby want to erase that sense of history.
Yeah, I wish we had more time to get into Hezbollah, Tony. That's a really important story as well. Listen, I appreciate it. Folks, thisweek.org.uk, of course, Bilderberg.org, if you want to know all there is to know about Bilderberg. Tony, you can hear Tony every Friday on BCFM's The Politics Show. Check it out, it's excellent, and we will keep our listeners updated after that Ofcom decision. Thanks, mate, for giving us your time today.
You'll be the first to know, Richie. God bless, thanks.
You too, mate. Thanks a lot. Tony Gosling, a great friend and colleague there, live on the line from Bristol. Shocking that Ofcom took seriously that complaint by the so-called UK lawyers for Israel, but we'll find out that decision in due course when it does come out, and we'll let you know. These are very difficult times. Talked yesterday about media plurality and global media, getting rid of dozens and dozens and dozens of breakfast shows in local stations around the country. It's very difficult times for independent media, believe you me.